Okay, so this is file 241. It's the first lecture meeting, and it is August 16th. And so we're going to talk about how you log into Blackboard, how you use some of the online materials, and why do you want to go online, and mouse around a little bit there. And then we'll have a lecture and maybe answer some questions. Okay? All right, so besides the lab, which is exactly the same as an on-campus class, and the lecture, which is pretty close to an on-campus lecture, then you also have work to do in Blackboard. That's the virtual classroom. And maybe some of you have taken online classes at this college or at other colleges, so you might be familiar with it, but some people maybe aren't so familiar with it. So let's just log on really fast. So you need a username and password, and I also emailed everybody out this information that's in the welcome letter, that if you don't know your username and password, there are ways in the welcome letter that you can mouse around and find out what that is. All right, but to get onto Blackboard is so important this week. If you can't log on for whatever reason, then you have to send me an email and we'll work on it remotely together. I can change your passwords and make sure that you get access by the end of the week. All right, so it's important to do that. That's probably your number one goal this week, is to make sure you can log on to Blackboard and access this class. So first you have to start with your user number, and that starts with that ampersand, and then you have a bunch of numerals. All right, so here's one that I use. All right, and then you also use a password, and this should transfer from your Gateway account directly into Blackboard. Two different programs, two different sets of programmers. They usually have the handshake worked out, but sometimes it doesn't get transferred over, and if it doesn't, let me know, and I'll switch it to something generic, and then you can log in and switch it to whatever password you want. So that's a pretty easy procedure to do that. All right, so when you enter that information, I usually click login, but you could probably hint enter if you want. All right, and then here is the window that opens up. You get some announcements over here, a bunch of tools that I don't use. And then here are all the classes that you have registered for, that you have content in Blackboard for. Okay, you might not be taking quite as many classes as I am. But let's start here with this physiology class. Oh, here's a physiology, and then guess what? There's a couple more physiology classes down here. All right, so you see at least four sections of physiology, all right, but that's all this one room right here. It looks like one class, but it's not. So if you send me an email with a question about your grade, I can't find you in this maze of Blackboard classes that I have, right? I need to know your particular CRN number. So always put that in the subject heading as well as 241, because I teach 160, 102, 231, right? So make sure I always get your CRN number, and I'll be able to help you out a lot faster. That way I don't have to open up all these classes just to find you. So that helps me immensely. That's really good. All right, so let's look at this physiology class right here. And here are some announcements, and it's just a welcome letter. But if you know how to log into Blackboard, then you have already read the welcome letter. That's not too important. But I'll put other things, announcements about don't forget to study this on a test or that or on a test. So pay attention to that. Oh, another idea came to me. So make sure that your email address is current and that you check it periodically in this class. That's a requirement of the course, because I will send out emails to everybody. So did anybody who is registered for this class not get my email? Okay, so we'll have to look at that, but you know I sent it out pretty late last night, so maybe you didn't check today yet. Okay, so check sometime, and we'll make sure that your correct email address is in there. So you have a bunch of good buttons over here in the left-hand frame. You can click on that, and guess what you get? You get another link to the syllabus. That's just a PDF file. You can download this PDF file to your hard drive. I recommend doing that. So if you want to look at the syllabus, you don't have to have internet connection every time. Just download it to your hard drive. So as soon as you turn your computer on, you can get the syllabus. So how would you download this particular file to your own computer, as opposed to just opening it up on this computer right here and not saving it? On most computers, like PC computers, and I think even Macintoshes now, have two mouse buttons. The left-hand one is the usual one that you use to execute a link, But if you use the one that you don't normally use, which is the right-hand mouse button, you get another menu. It doesn't do anything. It gives you more options. So you say save link as, or save target as, or save this thing as a file someplace on your hard drive. So create a 241 folder and just throw all this junk into that folder, and you'll be able to access it whenever you turn your computer on, right? So this particular case, I'd say save link as, but it actually saves the whole folder to a particular location, and this location is downloads. I don't like that so much. Let's find Dr. Ogoshi's folder and stick it in there. Okay? No, I don't want to do that. How about Dr. Raja? No, let's put it in mine. I'll be nice today. Okay? All right, so let's stick it in here. So this is fall 2011, and I don't have it, so might as well put it in here. Good, so it's there. That's the syllabus. Course information probably has a syllabus in it as well. A lot of these things you can find in multiple locations. Here's a welcome letter. Weekly study plan, I want you to fill out and work with your lab instructors to get your study time, because this class will require some study time on your part. And if you get a D on the first test, right, then you want to look at your study plan and figure out, well, how can I do better on that next test? You know, I want an A. I'm going to have to study 5 more hours during the week, and that will give you some tools to do that. You also need some plugins for this class. Okay, if you don't have Microsoft Word, you can get a viewer. If you don't have a PowerPoint program, you can get a viewer for that. I do some webcasting, so if you don't have a video program, you can get this DVX player to play videos, and that's a really good program. I've never had it not work. It always works really nicely. Windows Media Player, sometimes you get the video file but not the audio, or sometimes the audio comes through and not the video, right? DVX always worked. Okay, so what else do we have right here? This is kind of the important point of the class right here, weekly assignments. All right, these have all been programmed to open up at the proper time during the semester. These are the things that you should be doing every week. So you see in this listing right here, there's a week at a glance. And what kind of important thing do you see, like right in this area right here? I see a dollar sign, okay? These are the things that you have to complete for course points. And if you don't complete them, you don't get those points, and it will count against you. And as a matter of fact, if you don't do these assignments, it counts as an absence. So it's real important to make sure you do all of these assignments, and it could be a quiz or other kind of activities that have a dollar sign icon associated with them. And you have to complete this assignment by Wednesday, August 24th. All right, so that's a week from tomorrow. So that's a pretty long time. So during this time, you should be working on the materials inside this particular week one module. And so you got some objectives right here, and it tells you what pages to read in the textbook right here. Here are the important concepts that you should understand when you're done reading the textbook. So after you're done studying all of these modules and you read this objective right here, like define homeostasis, and you go, I've never heard of homeostasis before. Okay, that's a sign you're not ready for the test, right? So then go back and look up homeostasis and just review it, make sure you understand it very well. The rest of these materials here, right, help you understand and attain all of these objectives. So we have some animation quizzes, practice quizzes right here. So these are multiple choice. Some are true and false. Some of these questions I like to lift out of these. This website, this is a website from your manufacturer of your textbook, the publisher of your textbook, and put it on a test. So this is a good way to prepare for the upcoming lecture exam, okay? And that will also then give you a feeling for how you're doing, how you would do on the lecture test if you were to take it today. So you can get good information, good feedback before you actually take a test in here. And then here is the weekly quiz. You would click on this link. And these weekly quizzes, like I said, you can take an unlimited number of times, and there is no time limit either. So you can use a lot of repetition to review some of the concepts. And the questions in this quiz can come from these questions or actually anything in these modules right here. All right, so there's a lot of nice things that you can work with. What else did I want to say? When you're done with the weekly online quiz, your grades will then automatically pop up into the grade book and be incorporated into your grade. Now, when you do a test or a quiz in lab that has to be manually graded, then it takes a little bit longer than instantaneous feedback. Okay? It might take, everything is done within a week anyway. Okay. So all of these modules will become available at the proper time. You have, week one, week two, week three open right now. So you can pace yourself, but don't forget, each one of these modules has a deadline by itself. They won't disappear until the test, but the weekly quiz for week three will definitely disappear, right, September 7th at 11 p.m. Okay, all assignments are going to be due Wednesday at 11 p.m., and it is every week until Christmas. All right, so please don't forget to do that. Actually, maybe the week before Christmas, something like that. But even Thanksgiving week, because Wednesday night is not Thanksgiving. Right? But these are all open early enough to where you could complete all these well in advance, right? And that would be true for the final exam, too. Okay, one last thing about this 11 p.m. right here. That's the deadline. Blackboard does not work the same depending on what time of day it is. It works great in the morning because not a lot of people are using it, right? And then it has a tendency to slow down and be a little crashy in the evenings, especially after 10 p.m. So it's not a good idea to sit down and learn a bunch of material at 10:30 and then try to take a quiz before 11 because the system's going to be slow. As a matter of fact, it might even crash. Who knows, right? So get the work done ahead of time, but the programming is there so that you can persevere and proceed through these modules at your own pace, well in advance of this deadline right here. Okay. You're responsible for having a reliable computer and internet connection so that if you log on at September 7th at 10:30 and then your computer is not working or your internet connection is not working, that's not a valid excuse for missing the quiz. Okay, so you just got to maintain your computer and your internet connection working just fine. The computers in the Learning Resource Center and library are fantastic. You can always work on those computers there. Here are a couple other, these are extra credit quizzes. And again, these don't have a deadline. The deadline is at the end of this semester. You have to complete these for extra credit, right? So it's unlimited number of times. There's no time limit on these. This one will show you how to check your internet connection in your computer. Is it up and functioning the way it should be so that you can actually do well on the online material? So here's a website for speed test and ping test that will analyze your internet connection. So if you change your computer, change your internet connection at home, you might want to test it before you sit down and take a quiz to see if it is really working, right? By actually taking this quiz. And if you can take this quiz, guess what? There's no reason why you can't, by some technology problem, all right, finish any other kind of quiz in the class. All right? And then there's another extra credit quiz. This is a syllabus. So download the syllabus, have that handy, read it over maybe a couple times, answer some questions on the syllabus, and you'll get some extra credit points for that. And that is, oh, what do you have right here? What does that look like? Anybody know what this icon is? It's not a dollar sign. It's a stamp, and it's a forever stamp, which means that it will be active forever throughout the whole class, okay, until the class is over. The same thing for this, all right? Not a dollar sign. You get credit for this quiz, but it's a forever quiz. It just stays there until the class is over, okay? So those are the only two forever quizzes. These others go away by the deadline. And all these online quizzes are open book, open notes, of course, with Wikipedia access. You can use anything you want to learn this information and work it a number of different times. Okay, let's see. What else do we want to look at? Repetition is really important when you're trying to learn new topics. So I have pre-lecture reading assignments. Notice there's no forever stamp or dollar sign stamp. You don't get course points for these. But if you do the lecture reading and answer these questions before lecture, then you'll become familiar with terminology and concepts before I talk about them in lecture. Some of these things are going to be a little bit strange to you the first time you hear them. Like the first time I heard them, it goes right over the top of your head. Not a good time for information to go over the top of your head during lecture, right? So do some of these exercises before lecture so that when I mention it in lecture, it really hits home. It goes in instead of just bouncing off. All right, so here are all of the pre-lecture reading assignments. And then at the proper time after lecture, the keys become available for you to look at, because I want you to correct your answers, because I'm the instructor, I can see them all right now, but you can only see probably one after the lecture is over today. And so these are my answers to the questions. There might be other correct answers or partially correct answers that you can put into these questions right here, but since I'm the one that makes the test and I grade the test, you probably want to know how I'm thinking, right? So this is just some feedback so that you can get your thinking into the same way that your instructor is thinking. So those are really handy. Try to stay with those. Stay current with those. All right, on exams, so I'll show you this just kind of quickly. Here are the exam study guides. And sometimes I'll take a figure that's in your textbook, I'll white out the labels, and then on a test I want you to label it properly like it's labeled in the book, and there'll be a word bank, right, and it's like matching. Those figures are in here for you to practice with, and as a matter of fact, okay, these study guides have been incorporated into the textbook, which I learned today is now available in the bookstore. Yeah, hallelujah, okay. So, been working pretty hard on getting it here or some other kinds of materials for you. So, it's in the bookstore. It's a loose leaf book, so it's a lot cheaper. Did anybody buy it yet? Did anybody buy it? Okay, so it's right here. Oh, yeah, I probably want to take a picture of the cover. That's not the cover that I thought it was going to be, but that's good enough. Oh, it's on the back. Okay, it's got two. One of these days I'll take a picture for the syllabus next time. Okay. No, that's good. It's over in the bookstore, so that just confirms it's in the bookstore. And it's a lot cheaper than the hardbound version, and so for cash flow reasons, that's why I ordered the softbound ones. And then people in anatomy kind of like that. But you can't sell it back. And as a matter of fact, as soon as you open up the saran wrap, that's exactly when you cannot return it to the bookstore. So as a matter of fact, maybe it is a good idea that you hold it up, because that's the textbook right there. Yeah, with the study guide. That's the current edition, which is 12. Okay, so that's the 12th edition of that particular textbook, but the study guide modifies it. And the big reason why I went to a custom book is because then I can keep it for 5 years. I don't have to go to a new textbook next year, which probably means that it does have resale value to somebody that's going to take this class, all right, on this campus. All right. Yeah, question.
I know the syllabus you have written about is a custom edition.
Yeah.
You can try to buy it online.
Yeah, you don't get the study guides with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are also copies of the traditional version, the hardbound version, in the reserve section of the library. And you can check it out for 2 hours, but you can't take it out of the library. Okay, so I have a number of copies there for you to look at. Okay, but it doesn't have the study guide. The lab is not built in.
I haven't.
And the lab is this one right here. Okay, there used to be a CD program for running physiology simulations on a computer, and that's no longer available, so we'll have that loaded onto the computers. That's called Physio EX, and that you do not have to buy. But you couldn't buy it even if you wanted to, because it's no longer available. We used this book last semester. Yeah. Okay. But this book is cheaper than if you buy a used book, maybe it's a little bit cheaper. I think we cut the price in about half. So, okay. So here are all the exam study guides. You want to look around in there. Okay, and then maybe some of these other buttons we'll talk about later on in the semester. So I want you to look over the syllabus. Maybe next time we'll talk about the syllabus and the grading scale and things like that. But basically, it's just a 90-80-70 scale. And there's some extra credit here and there. I know there's an extra credit assignment in this week's lab for drawing that figure of a response loop. You have 3 hours to go over that in lab, and we're going to talk about that today or next time. That's actually a very key stone concept in physiology. So you should have a picture of that in your mind. And even after you draw that out this week in lab, all right, and you get your extra credit point for that, you should probably draw it out at least 5 times over the weekend to make sure that you never forget that response loop, because you'll be thinking of everything we talk about in this class through that through that figure. Okay, so it's a very important figure to know. That is probably one other advantage of a hybrid class, is that it is very graphically based, and most people do really well with visual learning, so that's kind of handy to have all these graphics in a computer for you. Okay. The other thing, course documents, this is where you can, okay. PowerPoint slides that I show in class are in this part of Blackboard. You can download them and print them. Probably you want to go to handout mode, print 4 per page, or maybe 2 per page, depending on, I would print them in black and white, so become familiar with your printer commands so you don't spend $500 printing out the first lecture, okay? All right. People that have the lab on Thursday, I want you to go to this part of this course documents, and then PowerPoint files, and then print out Lab 1 PowerPoint, homeostasis. All right, I did that for Tuesday's section, but I will not do that for Thursday's lab. So for those of you that are taking the lab on Thursday, download this file. All right, so how would you download this file to your computer? Right-click. Save target as, or save link as, or whatever, save it there, and then print it out using a PowerPoint program. And if you don't have Microsoft PowerPoint, then get the free viewer that you can find in, you can get the plugin in course information right here. All right, but this is the one that we're going to look at today. So it's probably handy. Most students like to have a hard copy for lecture. But if you're going to use a computer, that's fine. Maybe you can just keep it electronically in your computer and not even print it out, and you can make comments in PowerPoint. The only thing I ask is that if you're going to be using a computer in class with a keyboard, make sure that when you type, it's not really noisy. I've had a couple of people in, business meetings, which is a little bit smaller group, and they're pounding away on their keyboard, and you can hardly hear what's happening. Okay, so just kind of be respectful, or maybe you just have a touch glass keyboard. Okay, so try not to annoy your neighbors by typing too loud. All right, so that's good. Anybody have any questions about Blackboard right now? But that is your big goal this week, is make sure you can log into Blackboard. Some students will add the class. The way you add into the class is by finding a spot in lab. Okay, so right now I don't know if I can let anybody in. Go to the very first minute as lab opens. I'll drop no-shows and then give add codes out to people that show up to add the class. After you add the class, okay, the other thing is, even if you're on the wait list and we let you into class, you still have to officially register. Some colleges have a nice wait list system that automatically adds you to a class, all right, but not here at Cypress College. If I give you an add code, you still have to go through the same rigmarole and click everything and make sure you get some kind of confirmation from the computer that you successfully added the class. And after you add the class, it might take maybe 12 hours to get Blackboard privileges, because these programs are different and they have to roll information from one to the other to the other to the other. So if you have an add code and register this afternoon, you'll be able to get into Blackboard tomorrow morning. And if you can't, then give me an email and I'll see what happened. Okay, so it takes a little while. All right, I think that's all I got to say.
I had a question.
Oh, good. Most of them are submitted automatically when you click Save and Submit.
Okay.
Okay, and it will be graded almost instantaneously, and your grade will be put into Blackboard. I don't have many other kinds of assignments where you have to do other kinds of things.
Okay, and what about those homework assignments?
Oh, the pre-lecture assignments? Those are all hard copy.
Okay.
Or you could do it inside your computer, but you don't have to submit them. They don't have a dollar sign icon or a forever stamp icon. Okay, so those are for your own learning benefit. But always go back and check the key to understand how I'm thinking.
Right.
And you might have to tweak your impression about something here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you recommend always printing out the lecture and the lab notes for class, or is that consistent?
Oh, I think most students do that. Okay, depends on how a person likes to learn. Some people learn by writing notes. And if you learn a lot by writing notes and rewriting notes, then I wouldn't print the notes out ahead of time, because you'll be missing a good opportunity to learn if that's how you learn. But a lot of people learn by listening, okay, and watching something happening. So if you're writing a bunch of notes, then when you're writing those notes, you're not listening and you're not watching the board, and then you miss out on the information. So it depends on your learning style, right? And everybody is, you know, has different components of learning styles. It's not one way or the other. But most people like to print the notes out ahead of time, okay, so that they can pay attention more as opposed to writing. But writing, and of course, drawing is really good for learning new material. Oh, yeah. Ah, here I have in Blackboard a link. There's a link also in, oh, I don't have a link. I don't have a button. I'll put a button in here, okay, to find my recordings. But I do have a website. I'll write it down. I won't put these recordings on the internet until over the weekend, but it is the usual http://, etc., etc. All right, j-gober.com. Oh, you know what? That's not quite true. There's a dr in front of that. Yeah, that's a shame, because you got to be really literal. Computers just won't know. Dr. J. Gober. But I'll put a button in Blackboard. All right, but there's a lot of different courses in there, so make sure you find your course, and then you'll have to go to this semester. But if you want to listen to a previous semester, they're all in there too. Okay, just by mousing around, you can find that. Look at that. There's no button for that. Okay. Yeah, I'll put that in there. There's it in. There'll probably be a link and instructor information there too eventually. All right. So let's start talking about some good stuff. Here's that PowerPoint file. Study of body function. You want to do that? Okay, so I have a few slides right here. So human physiology, right? You've all taken an anatomy class and know some structures of the body. That's fundamental to knowing physiology, because you don't really understand how the body works unless you know what all pieces are in there. So that's real important. All right, so that's the big difference between anatomy and physiology. Physiology is the study of how the body functions. Not necessarily the pieces, but you do have to know the pieces. And so you might actually have to go back, get your anatomy book out, and relearn the pieces that make up the human body for you to understand a lecture, for instance, or to understand a physiologic concept. And it's a shame that we ever forget anything, especially our anatomy. All right. Oh, there's one other last thing I forgot. Here's a sign-in sheet. I'm going to pass it around. Every officially registered student is on the sign-in sheet right here. And this is how I take attendance in class. And even if I know you and you don't sign the sign-in sheet, I can't remember a particular day if you were in class or not. And so you'll be counted as absent. So it's very important that you sign the sign-in sheet in lecture as well as lab. All right, so I'm going to pass it around right now. So please sign in. And when you're done, somebody after class, you can bring it down from the top. Right, so that's your receipt that you're in class. Okay, pathophysiology is a discipline on how the body misbehaves, or how a body goes from a healthy state to disease state. What kind of processes take somebody from healthy to a disease state? And when you understand that, then of course you think of good ways to bring a person back into health, right, by fighting this disease process. Right, so we study physiology and pathophysiology in here as well. These are the main topics. But don't forget, you need a basic understanding of chemistry and anatomy in order to understand physiology. Yeah?
You took the IL-160 class?
Uh-huh. Nope, it's not. Yeah, it's got to be 210 or 231, or there was an anatomy class called 230 at one time here. All right, and I don't know what those classes would be at other colleges. Okay, but it's got to have a laboratory with it. So 210 is a great class. It has a nice six-hour lab every week. Okay. Well, you get to learn a lot in 6 hours. I know people that take anatomy only have a three-hour lab, and you're really pressed hard to learn everything that you have to know in just 3 hours. All right, so the first thing that we're going to talk about, okay, is scientific method. Probably some of you have looked at scientific method, and it kind of seems like a tedious topic. All right, but it's important, and you should be able to appreciate why it is so important. So let's dissect scientific method just a little bit to see what's going on right here. All right, so one of the first steps in the scientific method is to form a testable hypothesis about some observations. All right, so an observation is when you're just going about your daily life, there might be something that you see over and over and over again happening. It might be a certain kind of circumstance, yeah. Yeah, so if you're not registered for the class, just sign in on a blank line. Oh, if on the wait list you're not officially registered yet, so any blank line underneath is good. All right, and if you think you're registered but your name is not there, guess what? You're not registered, or there's a problem somewhere along the line. We'll have to work on that. Okay, so after going about your life, right, for a year or 2 years, you might see some kind of pattern that you recognize, and then you make a guess about how the world is operating. And that guess is a hypothesis, right? So in your notes, I want you to write down, right above hypothesis, it's a guess. All right, so it's just a best guess about how you think a certain thing operates. Okay, but in order to be scientific method, you have to be able to come up with some kind of experiment to be able to test that hypothesis. And that's really difficult to do in many circumstances and completely impossible in many other kind of circumstances. All right, so can anybody think of a hypothesis that you might have that is completely untestable? What might you believe to be true about your existence that it is impossible to test? Okay, and when you get into that realm of belief or not belief, that takes you into the realm of religion, right? So you might say, well, all right, is there a creator? Is there a God? Right? Well, you might have a very important, strong opinion about that, but there's really no way to test that with scientific methods, so that's beyond the scientific method, right? It's nonetheless a very valid way of thinking and running your life, but it still can't ever be a part of scientific method. It has to be testable. All right, so if you come up with experiments, you conduct the experiments and you analyze the results of the experiments, and they can either prove or disprove your guess on how things operate in the world, or this hypothesis right here. Okay, and then you can draw conclusions, whether or not your experiments support the hypothesis or not. And then if all your experiments support your initial guess on how the world works, then you can develop a theory about it. So a theory is just a general statement explaining some natural phenomena that started out just by an observation or a guess that has been proven by these experiments right here. All right, so you've got two main concepts right here. You've got a hypothesis and you have a theory. One contains a lot more importance than the other. For instance, let's just say in this particular class, you're interested in getting an A. All right, so we're going to say get an A. But we've got two different ways that you can get an A in this class. All right, so we get an A. All right, so one person comes up to you and says they have, all right, a hypothesis. And if you study A, item H, okay, and Z, then guess what? You're going to get an A in the class. Someone else comes up to you and says they have a theory. And if you study B, C, and D, you're going to get an A in the class. All right? So what method are you going to use to get a grade in the class? Are you going to study A, H, and Z, or are you going to study B, C, and D? B, C, and D, because it's a theory. Don't forget, a hypothesis is just a guess. It may or may not be true. But a theory more than likely is true because it's been proven by experiments. Okay, and we're going to talk about these experiments in just a little bit more detail. All right, so a theory should hold a lot more weight for you compared to a hypothesis, because a hypothesis is just what? It's a guess. Okay. All right. So, when you make, when you come up with an experiment, you should have two groups, right? Experimental group and a control group. And the reason why we do that is because sometimes when you perform an experiment, you influence the results of the experiment without really knowing about it. Okay, so an experimental group gets some kind of manipulation. They might get some kind of treatment. For instance, how about if we think of maybe some kind of birth control method where you need a shot of a hormone in your body, very inconvenient by today's standards, okay? And usually it's going to be some kind of hormone, and those hormones dissolve in oil but not water. So that kind of shot is fairly objectionable because it's hard to get a shot that's oil as opposed to water that you absorb right away. Okay? And so we got two groups. The experimental group is going to get a shot of oil plus the active drug in their bodies, right? And then the control group has to do exactly the same thing. They got to drive to the hospital or the clinic. They got to see that hypodermic needle and the big syringe coming at them, feel the injection and everything, and they got to get the oil, right, which is a little bit painful, but what is going to be missing? The active agent, right? Because even the oil will have some effects on your body. It has hormone-like characteristics, all right? So when you do that, then you can subtract or understand what the results of just going to the hospital, interacting with people, getting the shot, getting the vehicle, which is the oil that the active drug is dissolved in, to see what effect that has on the body. So it's very important to be able to control the experimental group with the control group to really know what the effects are. All right, the other thing is that these measurements that you're going to be looking at, all right, should be quantitative, should be a way that you can measure them very easily with an instrument, for instance, and performed blindly. What does that mean, performed blindly? Well, you don't want somebody in there giving shots with a blindfold on, right? Because you want them all in the right location. But the person that's giving the shot should really know nothing about the study. Right, and they shouldn't know if the person that's getting the treatment is in the experimental group or control group, because they might influence the results of the study by who knows how you communicate. What is one of the major ways that you communicate to people? Facial expression, right? Tone of voice. Not even exactly what you say, but just your body position and facial expression and everything. So somebody that's giving a shot could influence these two groups right here. For instance, let's just say somebody that's giving the shot on a contraception study has an ethical reason why they have something against contraception. Okay, and there's plenty of people that have that idea, right? And they might want to influence, even unconsciously, the results of this study, right? Because they have a religious belief or some kind of ethical belief that would actually influence the study. So that's why it has to be performed blindly. Right, and then the results should be analyzed using statistics, because again, statistics are unbiased. And so that's a very good way to analyze the data. All right, so it's pretty cumbersome to do a scientific method study. All right, so why do you want to put up with all of these different steps and find all of, and set up these different control groups and get people to do all these tasks and they don't even know what they're doing? So what's the purpose of the scientific method? Why is it useful for us to do this? Just a take-home message is really what I want you to know about the scientific method. What does it provide us? Yeah, because it gives you reliable information, information that you can count on, right? I mean, you always should keep an open mind, right? Because there might be some circumstances where maybe something doesn't work exactly like you think. You might need to run some other experiments. But it gives you reliable information. What information would you like to have? Study A, H, and Z, or study B, C, and D? B, C, and D. And how do you get this information here? By employing the scientific method, right? So the scientific method is real important because it gives you reliable information that you can count on. So that's a real important take-home message for you to have. The other thing about the scientific method, right, and I think I'm done talking about scientific method, is that in your textbook, the thing, all the information that is presented in your textbook is at this level here. It's at theory. You're going to run into really some strange concepts and you're going to say, oh, that can't possibly be true. But guess what? in your everything in your textbook is at the level of theory. So it is something that you can count on. It might be modified later on in 10 years or whatever for different groups or different circumstances, but it's a theory. I might present some conjecture in class, some fun things to think about, but I'll always tell you that it is a guess. Okay, so it's not something you can count on, but it's interesting to consider. Yeah. Okay, it's not a theory if it's been tested once. Okay, so there's really no kind of clear requirement, but an experiment should be performed by a number of different groups, and it's okay if these groups are competing with each other for funding or whatever, right? And all these different groups in different parts of the world, all right, should come up with the same results. And so if this experiment works for different groups, different parts of the world at different times, then it can be incorporated into a theory. I know about maybe 20 years ago, there were two physicists at University of Utah that came up with a way for cold fusion. I don't know if you guys heard about this or not, which would be a way to provide an unlimited amount of energy in the world just by using water molecules in a certain way at very low cost. And it made the news, and everybody's really excited, but everybody that kind of knew physics said, well, you know, there's not ever going to be such thing as cold fusion because it disobeys the laws of thermodynamics. And the lab came back and said, oh, our results are really good. We ran the test a couple of times, so we're sure it's true. And a bunch of other labs tried to reproduce those results and couldn't. And so it never became a theory, and we're still stuck paying $5 a gallon for gasoline, okay? So, yes, it has to be reproduced by other laboratories or other hospitals anywhere, pretty much, yeah. All right, so here's a real important concept in this class called homeostasis. All right, so homeostasis kind of comes from, and you're going to be working with this concept a lot in lab, comes from an understanding that the functioning inside your body, the physical conditions inside your body, are a lot different than the physical conditions outside your body. Like, what would be a really good example of how your body inside is different than the outside world? By temperature, for instance, because your inside temperature right now is about 98.6, but it's not 98.6 in here, because if it was, probably none of us would be here, right? It would be way too hot. All right, so there is an internal environment that is alive and living, and it's different than the outside world. All right, so that's kind of a starting point, but homeostasis means much more than that. All right, so it's a condition in which all these different physiological parameters, like blood pressure, the amount of acid that you have in your body, and a measure of acidity in your body is called pH, as well as temperature, fluid levels, right, and all different kinds of factors of the internal environment are maintained within a range of values suitable to support life. Now, the really key term right here is range. It doesn't mean that your body temperature is exactly constant, right, throughout your whole life. What homeostasis means is that it can go up a little bit and down a little bit, but it's always going to go back to some kind of normal value, which we call the set point. Right, so homeostasis means that your body is not absolutely constant. It's changing all the time, so that means that there's a dynamic state. Your body's in a dynamic state all the time where the body systems are working and constantly adjusting to changing external conditions and internal conditions. Right, so homeostasis means that everything in your body is changing a little bit so that nothing in your body has to change a lot. Right, and that is going to maintain a healthy state. If you are in homeostasis, that means you're in a healthy state. If you cannot maintain homeostasis, then you're in a disease state because one of these parameters or more move beyond the range that's suitable to support life. Okay, so I like to think of homeostasis kind of as like a dance that's going on between all of these different parameters. Okay, so I'll talk about that a little bit more. So different parts of your body help regulate each other. So there are long-range reflexes and short-range reflexes. Some of these figures are not in your book. I can't remember which ones are or are not. All right. Maybe the next slide is not in your book, and maybe these are right here. So here we have some long-range reflexes that are produced by signaling molecules. These are chemicals that start at one location in your body and move to some distant location. Okay. So here we have a cell. This is a hormone-secreting cell, so this is an endocrine cell that synthesizes a product, and it could be a lipid or a water-soluble product like a protein. And it's secreted from the cell, and then it gets picked up. It can diffuse into this blood vessel, and then when it's in this blood vessel, where does it go?
Everywhere
in your body, right? A really long distance, right? Short distances, we're talking about the distance between one cell and another, just a couple of microns. But in this case, we're talking meters. So this is a long-range reflex. And then after it gets in the bloodstream, it goes to some target cell, and it changes the activity of this target cell. So this hormone can start in your brain, go down to your big toe, and change some activity or physiology in your big toe, for instance. So that's a really long-range effect right here. Here we have a nerve. So this compound that's secreted by this cell and is transmitted throughout the whole body by the circulatory system, right? That is what we call a hormone. And so if that's a hormone, then this is an endocrine gland. Okay, and notice I don't see a duct right here. So an endocrine gland is a ductless gland. This hormone doesn't get transported to where it goes by a duct. It gets transported by what? A blood vessel. Yeah, by a blood vessel. So in this case, the duct is really a blood vessel, but we don't even consider that. What do we call a gland that uses a duct to transport its product to a distant location? That would be an exocrine gland as opposed to endocrine, right? Okay. Another kind of long-range reflex we have is performed by this nerve cell, right? And the reason why this is a long-range reflex is because these processes coming off the neuron are very short. We call these dendrites. But this process right here is very long. This is an axon. And this axon could be a meter long as well. So again, you're not talking about local cells in a local neighborhood. You're talking about vast distances inside your body. So this is a long-range reflex. And then this signaling molecule right here being released from the neuron is not really called a hormone, right? It doesn't get picked up by the blood. It's called a neurotransmitter, and it just diffuses a short distance, but this cell is still very, the cell body is still very far away from what this effector cell, where this effector cell is. So it's still a long-range reflex, right? And it's an electrical impulse that takes this information. All right, so you got a hormone and a neurotransmitter being signaling molecules. Here is another little motif. Here we have a nerve cell again, very similar to this one, but I see a difference. What's the difference that I see? The axon is really short, all right? So you're going to say, oh, well, that's not a long-range reflex. So it secretes a substance, all right? But it doesn't act in this local neighborhood. It gets picked up by a blood vessel and goes where? Everywhere in the body. So that means it does exert its influence over very long distances, all right? So here is a compound that's secreted by a neuron. What do we call that? We call that a neurotransmitter. But now that chemical doesn't produce control right in this neighborhood, that signaling molecule gets picked up by the blood. So what do you call a signaling molecule that gets picked up by the blood?
Hormone.
A hormone. So we have some confusion. What is this compound released by this neuron right here? Is it a neurotransmitter or is it a hormone? Well, you know what? Well, life gets a little complicated. It's not simply one or the other. It's acting as both. So we call it a neurohormone. All right, and that goes to some target cell right here. And what's the effect of a neurohormone on this target cell right here? It changes the physiology of that cell, right? A neurotransmitter changes the physiology of this cell. Neurohormone changes the physiology, and a hormone changes the physiology of these target cells right here. Okay. As a matter of fact, in some advanced classes, you don't study the nervous system by itself, and you don't study the endocrine system by itself, because they're integrated in a number of locations to where they actually act as a single system. And so some classes, we actually study the neuroendocrine system. And I'll point that out in certain locations in this class, so we don't spend a whole lot of time. All right, as opposed to long-range reflexes, sometimes we have short-range reflexes where a cell will change or control or adjust the physiology of cells, right? But since it's short range, we mean what? Just neighboring cells, cells in the local neighborhood. So here is a cell that can secrete an agent for whatever reason into the extracellular space, and it maybe diffuses to a neighboring cell, and we call that a paracrine agent, right? Because para means just local, short range, or next to. So it doesn't go from your brain to your belly button. It just stays in your brain, for instance. Another little adaptation to this concept right here is something called an autocrine agent, where this cell, right, produces a signaling molecule, and then it secretes it into the extracellular space, and then it binds to things on the cell membrane right here that then changes the physiology of the cell that secreted it. And that's what we call an autocrine agent. That's just a little modification of a paracrine agent. Right? It's still, just a very local response, but it can change the physiology of the cell that secretes that agent. We're going to look at specific examples of these things over the next couple of months. So these signaling molecules help control your body to maintain homeostasis. All right, so remember, homeostasis doesn't mean that your body temperature is constant, or that your pH is constant, or your blood pressure is constant. What does it mean? It means it can go up and down, but it can't change drastically or wildly that will put you in a diseased state. So don't forget, homeostasis means what? A dynamic constancy. So that sounds like a bunch of, right, incongruous words right here. And so homeostasis sometimes, because of that, is hard to appreciate. All right, so homeostasis maintains the body in this dynamic constancy right here. Okay, maintains conditions that are stabilized above or below a physiologic set point. So here we can make a measurement of any kind of physiologic parameter, maybe like temperature. And if we average out the temperature of your body over a long period of time, right, we can get an average value, which we might want to call 98.6 degrees. But at any particular time, chances are you're not going to be at 98.6, but you're going to be close. All right, if it's below 98.6, there are going to be mechanisms in your body that will increase your body temperature. And as your body temperature gets higher than 98.6, there are going to be other mechanisms that will start to decrease your body temperature, and your temperature will fluctuate around this set point. All right, so set point is a pretty important concept. So here is the normal range. So if your temperature is up over here, what state are you in? You're in a disease state, right? And then if your body temperature is down here, you're in a normal state, you're in homeostasis. Homeostasis is maintained by something we call negative feedback loops. All right, so we want to look at some concepts of negative feedback loops. These pictures are in your book, but I got some better ones in other books I'll provide for you. All right, so here you have a response loop and some components of a response loop. In order for your body to understand something about pressure, what does your body have to do in order to understand pressure inside your body? It's got to have a meter that can measure pressure. If there's no pressure receptor in your body, then your body can have no idea about pressure. Okay? As a matter of fact, in order for your body to know something about light, what do you need? You need to have photoreceptors, and they're located in your eyes. So if you don't have eyes, what is your impression of light? You have no idea what's going on, right? So you need a sensor for every particular modality of energy that your body wants to measure, right? So sensor is one of the first components of a response loop. So here is some modality of energy. We'll call that X. That could be temperature, it could be pressure, it could be salt concentration or glucose concentration, could be any number of things. And let's just say that this modality right here increases. Glucose concentration increases. Body temperature increases, right? So how does your body understand that something is increasing? It has to have a sensor, right? And so there's got to be some change in this parameter that's picked up by a sensor. The sensor then sends that information to an integration center. You have various integration centers in the body. One important one would be your brain, okay? And the integration center then looks at the value of this parameter, compares it to the set point, and if the value of this parameter right here is exactly at the set point, then the integration center says what? There's no error in the system. There's nothing that we have to do to get this value back to the set point. But if there is an error, then the integration center can analyze what the error is and then make a decision on what to do about the error. So, for instance, in your cold, if you are cold, if your body temperature is lower than normal, what's the decision this integration center going to make? It's going to make you shiver, right? Which will then, right, so the integration center is going to send information out via this efferent pathway, and if you're going to shiver, what organs in your body are being activated?
Muscles.
So the effector here would be a muscle. These muscles are going to contract, okay? And then that's going to, oh, I used maybe a little bit wrong example right here, okay? But that is going to be opposite compared to what the stimulus is, all right? So the response right here from the effector is going to subtract from what the initial stimulus is, all right? So if the response subtracts from the stimulus, what kind of mathematical sign do we use? Addition or subtraction? It's subtraction. And so then we call this a negative feedback loop because the response subtracts from the stimulus. All right, so that's why we call this a negative feedback loop. Now, what's the connotation that you have in your mind of something that's negative? Is it good or bad?
Bad?
It's bad. But in this particular case, don't forget, negative feedback loops maintain homeostasis, which is what? A good connotation. So negative feedback maintains a healthy, disease-free state. Now, if you have a positive feedback loop, right, if you have a stimulus that increases some physiologic parameter in your body, it goes through this loop right here, which then causes a further deviation away from set point, right, because the response adds to the stimulus. So if your body temperature increases, if there's positive stimulus, what's going to happen to your body temperature? It's going to go higher. And if there's still positive feedback, what's going to happen to your body temperature? It goes higher, and then higher and higher and higher, and then all of a sudden, you just burn up in a big fireball, okay? Obviously, that doesn't produce a disease-free state, okay? Of course, that doesn't really happen, but your body temperature can increase to such a point that you can't maintain life, and that's happened to a number of athletes this year, even though all coaches are familiar with it. People die of hyperthermia when they're out exercising, like in pre-football camps. I think it happened to a bunch of high school players already, where they actually lost so much water that they couldn't lose body temperature anymore, couldn't maintain homeostasis, and they died of overheating. They didn't explode in a fireball, but nonetheless, they still died of hyperthermia. Yeah.
Is there any like good cases of positive feedback in our body?
Yes, there are. And we're going to talk about these throughout the whole class. There's maybe about four or five, and because it's so noteworthy, we make special mention of that. One quick example would be, for instance, parturition. Parturition is when somebody delivers a baby, okay? And there are certain hormones that the fetus, there are stress hormones, because the fetus, as it gets bigger, it gets cramped, releases stress hormones, which then go across the placenta, and it signals the mother's, actually hypothalamus, to release a chemical compound called oxytocin. Oxytocin causes contraction of the uterus. All right, and as the uterus gets smaller, what happens to the fetus? Does it become more stressed or less stressed? More stressed. Releases more stress hormone, which then causes more oxytocin to be released, which causes more stress hormone, which causes more oxytocin. So these levels start to skyrocket, okay? But how come the whole world isn't just filled up with oxytocin and stress hormone? Because something happens. Something pops. Something breaks in a really big way in a positive feedback mechanism. Even though it's normal and healthy for a short period of time, there's still a drastic action that happens. And in parturition, it's delivery. Okay? And so the fetus is delivered, and then the mother's oxytocin level goes back down. So positive feedback certainly can't go on forever, only a short period of time. But there are a number of them where it's normal. Okay, that's just one example. All right, so here's a good question for you. Make sure you can answer these questions in your notes. Is X constant over time to maintain homeostasis?
No.
That's not what homeostasis means. It means X can vary just a little bit. It could go up and down, but if homeostasis is maintained, it's always going to go back down to the set point, right? So homeostasis is not absolutely constant. It means there's a dance going on inside your body all the time, where all these parameters are fluctuating up and down, but only under very small limits. All right, so this is the important figure that I want you to know in terms of a feedback loop. It's not in your book, but you have this figure in the email that I sent you. All right, and it's got all of the essential elements of a response loop, and we can talk about feedback, both positive and negative feedback. So a response loop always starts with a stimulus, and it always ends with a response right here. And next time, we're going to start with this diagram just to go over response loop because it's just so critical. But in the meantime, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet and bring it down in front, and then I'll meet you guys up at lab at 1 o'clock to see if I can add anybody. Okay. Oh, and make sure you can log into Blackboard this week. See you. Thanks for coming. Yeah.
My name is Brandon Woodruff.
Hey, Brandon. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you, too. I really
appreciate it. Let me turn this mic off.